My name's Daniel Flynn. I am Chief Exec of the YMCA in North Staffordshire.
And if you could start by maybe going talking about your first day at YMCA.
First day, I got the job in October and I had to give 3 months' notice to my previous employer. That was like hell on earth, staring out the window because my boss took all the work off me because I was obviously a traitor by then. And then I came here in the January after Christmas, and it was planned that I would have 3 months with the previous chief exec, Mavis, which was a blessing, but frustrating because I was like sort of new boss, you can't be new boss. And then the very first, I think the second day, we went on this with the then directors and me, new chief exec, Mavis, old chief exec. We went to Shalliford House to have a strategy day. So it was a bit bizarre. I was like, this is strange. That was it.
And how many years ago was that?
Oh, 2003-04 that was when I came here. Long time ago. I'm old now. I was 38 and now I'm 54, so there you go.
And could you try and describe as much as possible what YMCA, YMCA North Staffordshire was like in 2003-2004?
Brilliant people, very committed people. Stoke people are very committed and warm and hearted people. I think from a kind of management observational point of view, it was if you use an organisational life cycle curve, we were well down the right-hand side, lots of rules, lots of procedures, strange, lots of little teams, you know, the housing department, the finance department, you know, oh, there's a finance department, and there was one and a half staffed, you know what I mean? And you're like, really? So it was quite, it had become, I think, quite institutional in how it behaved, and there was all these little teams that saw that their little teams were almost fighting the other team over relatively strange crimes and misdemeanors and fallouts. And I had to stop all of that, basically, over the time. I think it was doing some good stuff, but I think it hadn't been invested in. It was a grotty. It wasn't very nice. It was kind of nicotine yellow everywhere, and some bright spark had used 70s, what's that stuff in your auntie's bathroom? What's that plaster stuff that's all horrible and bumpy? 70s, it's bad.
I couldn't tell you.
I'll remember the word in a minute. But, it wasn't very nice, particularly. It wasn't nice. You know, plastic in the kitchen, in the canteen. They were using things like, you know, not uniform tables. I remember going in thinking, no way. You know, it's like they got somebody's plastic barbecue furniture from the garden, you know, and different tables and plastic seats and, you know. I was like, But they had no money. They had no money. And it was survival mode.
Yeah.
You know, but I loved it. The potential was amazing. But, it was a bit like buying a second-hand car, you know what I mean? That you drive it home and you think, this is ace, and then you start looking at it and you think, help. You know, and I was wandering around and there was all different... The worst thing, I think, is some stupid youth worker had thought it was really cool to paint... There were 7 floors of accommodation, and there is now. But they painted them all sort of, you know, purple and mauve, man, to be, like, right on with down with the kids, you know, and it just looked shit. Sorry, language.
And what sort of projects was the YMCA running?
It was a
hospital around about 2003-2008.
It was a homeless project for homeless kids. And I think what happened was homelessness came whistling in. You know, certainly youth homelessness came whistling in the kind of late 80s, early 90s. And some of the provision was given over to what was called the Stepping Stones Project. Good project. And I think basically that kind of homeless provision had taken over everything. So there was a bit of a remnant of sports. We didn't have a sports hall, we had a couple of sports workers. But the poor, you know, the squash players, the tiny amount of squash players that came in used to run the rigour of these naughty homeless kids on the way in. And it was pretty anarchic and pretty rough, to be honest. And lots of conflict, lots of, you know, you broke the rules so you can go. Lots of, you know, how many times can we get caught smoking and dossing around? Lots of, you know, these. I've got a personal hatred of suspended ceilings because you can hide things behind them, can't you? Mm-hmm. You know, and things like that were just like almost who was running the gaff, the kids or the staff. And they had this rather strange thing of, this is brilliant, really, that they had this fast track resettlement. And when I kind of sussed that out, it was basically young people were going to be booted out, then got allocated the fast track resettlement, because obviously we don't want to make people homeless, that's right. But then what it meant was it was like a sort of doomed to failure. So the people who weren't ready for accommodation and move on were basically being offered it on some kind of strange moral sort of, we don't want to make people homeless. So, yeah, some funny things. Yeah, I remember sitting in my office, like, shutting the door. Mavis and I worked together. She was helpful. But when she'd gone, I could get on with things. And, the amount of times I'd kind of shut my office door and kind of lean against the door so nobody else could come in and hold my head in my hands thinking, oh, my gosh. You know, what the hell is that? You know, and wandered around the building thinking, oh, my God. I remember it was that knackered that I come in one day and the breeze blocks in the girls' toilets had just fallen to pieces. You know, the whole, you know, like in between the loos, it just, somebody had pushed. It was that knackered and broken that I think somebody had leaned against this wall and it just fell to pieces. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. So we needed a lot of money to repair the place.
And obviously we'll talk about the sort of transformation the YMCA has taken over time. Could you sort of describe the young people that were helped by the YMCA?
Yeah, great kids. Kids, I think the trouble with sort of over-liberal view of humanity in kids need dads and mums, you know, and that kind of over-liberal sort of social worky, carey worky, voluntary sector worky, it was neither a pig or a poke, was it? So, you know, rather than actually some young kids need some care and love and discipline and control and markers to, you know, they almost need like kind of landing lights, don't they, to kind of guide them on the runway. I do. That's why I have a chairman and a board. And it seems rather strange that, you know, you've got a situation in a charity where the chief exec gets more guidance, more support, more kind of help with these 12 mostly good trustees at the time. And the kids are kind of that kind of liberal. Well, they can make choices. It's up to them. And it seemed a rather strange liberalism that you got young people who weren't yet ready to make those choices being given the choice, and they didn't have the context to make the choice in. Mm-hmm. So as a young person, you know, should I invest myself and go college, or should I go up the road and smoke 500 spliffs? I'm having a party every day. And there was that naivety that what would you do if you were 16, 17, 18? And, well, they weren't actually. There weren't that many young people. There was this myriad of lots of ages, lots of immigrant guys, brilliant blokes, you know. And they were doing strange things, like, give you an example, like, well, he still works for me, Ali's brilliant bloke. They were paying an absolute fortune for Language Line because of needing to speak different languages to different people coming in, brilliant people coming in. And then in the midst of them, they got a guy who can speak six different languages who, well, why don't you pay him then? And I think that was an interesting one, because I think that set a tone of, well, if we've got resources within the building, why aren't we sweating them? Rather than paying some middle-class Language Line geezer, give a bloke a job, because we had a big issue of language. You know, and the staff, strangely, I've seen this, you know, institutional staff will go, they'll always choose the easier punter, won't they? So there was this myth, oh, we need older people to manage the younger people. And I was like, eh? What do I pay you for? So we then started making decisions. I mean, I was very fortunate to be able to have a board and have a chair and have a radicalism that was able to take this organisation from the end of a life cycle to right at the beginning. So what are we for? What does faith mean? Who should we be working with? What's our vision and mission? What's our value base? What does Christian mean? What does youth mean? What does YMCA mean? And we're very fortunate to have that time. So the first couple of years were about sort of first year kind of trying to understand it, trying to suss out what works, not trying to chuck the baby out with the bathwater, because I have got that propensity. blow it up and start again. Yeah. There was a bit of that, to be frank. And then he's bringing staff along with you. You know, I remember one full staff meeting because I might be more of a Christian. Perhaps it's just a different version of faith than the previous. And, you know, what does it mean? Do you have to be a Christian? No, you don't have to be a Christian to work here. No, of course you don't. What's a Christian? I thought, flipping heck. They weren't graceful conversations from these people. They were quite antagonistic, you know. And it was grotty. And I remember one thing when... I'd get sacked for this nowadays, but it is worth telling the story. You know, one of the cleaners, I said, he was grotty, and I said, you know, get that cleaned up. And the woman says to me, oh, duck, but it's better than the street, isn't it? And I thought, goodness me, is that the standard here? You know, it's better than the street. I should hope so, it's better than the street. And then I remember, because I'm a bit obsessed picking stuff up, it's like, if I don't do it, if I don't model the change, nobody does. And I remember walking through one area, picking up some rubbish. And one of the old members of staff sort of looked at me, take ages, pick up all the rubbish round here. And I remember jumping up, and I shall not use the expletive, but I jumped up like an insane person and say, take me off as long if you bent your back, won't it, mate? And I'd probably get sacked for constructive dismissal nowadays, wouldn't I? But it was just, I was just angry, you know, can't you see? And there was that kind of culture here of, YMCA is this big employer, and therefore, you know, Stokey's job for life, and sort of all bosses are no good, and, you know, you're like, I think there were only 35 of them, yeah. Full and part-time staff, it wasn't that big.
And so, just obviously, again, describing your sort of first 5 years, were you surprised at YMCA? You know, what was your sort of prior knowledge of YMCA? Did you sort of learn more about YMCA in the last 5 years than you have in the last 10?
Yeah, and at national level, you know, they were very, very sort of, oh, we're very fixed. We decided that in 1962 at the National Council. You know, the first National Assembly I went to, I was quite surprised because it was like a trade union conference, really. They had resolutions, red and green lights, speakers. I was like, what's going on here? Never been any of that. And that kind of reflection of old member, a membership organisation, a community organisation, a movement organisation, a democratic organisation, and actually brilliant. But those things worked when it fundraised itself. I mean, I think what I would say might be, you know, post welfare state, lots of YMCAs just became, as we did, subcontractors to the state. So a lot of it was kind of fluff, really, because it couldn't affect, you know, the commissioners were paying you to deliver a contract.
Yeah.
All this extra stuff didn't really matter. And it required local associations to engage in that process, and, you know, perhaps 50% of them at the most did. So it was a funny old thing. Lots of, you know, so we started a boxing club, and I remember YMCA, National YMCA, getting a phone call, having a bit of a growl at me. Oh, Danny, we don't do boxing in the YMCA. I said, why? Because it's violent. I said, well, maybe, but, you know, it seems to work. Oh, no, we and somebody said, we decided that. We had a national resolution in 1968. I said, well, it's 1990, it's 2006 now, mate, you know what I mean? So we just started it, and there's lots of boxing clubs now, aren't there?
Yeah,
there's loads. So I think that kind of describes the lack of flex sometimes in the YMCA nationally. I think it's improved massively as it's gone on. But the amount of times I got, oh, we don't do that. Oh, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. I was like, eh? No, we've never done that, so we won't do it. And that kind of almost decisions by democracy got the lowest common denominator, I think.
Yeah. And so obviously, you know, the first 5 years, you were sort of changing or transforming the YMCA as you first found it. 2008 happens, the global financial crash happens. Can you describe the sort of, you know, 2008-2009 scenario?
Well, I think the business model, all charities up to that point, had been, you know, that kind of government money, lots of money, new Labour money, and, you know, you got to play the market as it is. So, as an example, you know, there was lots of money around, and I managed to secure, from a capital point of view, probably best part of 15 million quid from various, and we built the campus. Great. Nightmare. Absolute nightmare. The building trade's dodgy, I'm telling you, and I'd say it publicly, it's no problem. And it's like herding cats, do you know what I mean? It's like, they're not interested in social good, they're interested in margin, as I discovered halfway through, you know, my naivety. But anyway, but we built it. We were then probably knocking on £3 million turnover, so we'd gone from, started, it was an 820 grand hostel, and we'd moved it and built services, built a training place, started expanding services, started doing some stuff, winning a few more contracts, moving out of the kind of ghetto of acute homelessness. We'd got younger. I remember one year somebody said, bloody hell, it was acting last year, wasn't it? And then we discovered, you know, that we'd, when we dropped the age to under 25, this particular year, we dealt with 100 16-year-old young women. Woof! They're hectic, I tell you, aren't they? Love them, but they're a bit... And that kind of, you know, the old naysayers, I told you it'd be better to take older people, they're easier. Yeah, but these kids are in need, so, you know, hang on. YMCA, young! There's a clue. Credit crunch comes along, and it, well, it's a bit of a slow burn, isn't it? Things take time to kind of die, as it were. But, you know, credit crunch comes along. Oh, dear. The bankers have just spent all of our money, and any money we had left, the government have just given to the bankers. Quite interesting, if you want a bit of history. Whenever there was a depression, Europeans and the British have always done austerity. The Americans have always done quantitative easing. So in the 30s, the response to the crash was FDR's New Deal in America, where they were spending loads of money, Hoover Dam, building roads, creating jobs. In Britain, it's always been the other way around, which is strange, you know. But anyway, credit crunch is coming. It's obvious it's coming. First year there was a bit money around. There was transition money. You know, it was almost like, you know, have a party now because the world's going to end next year. When the what's it did hit the fan, we lost a third of our income in 1 year. So for a charity to lose over, you know, we were then at 3 point something million. We lost 1.2 million in 1 year, which was a big hit. People had to be made redundant, services had to be shut down. And at the same time, we'd opened up this campus thinking, oh gosh. At the time, the focus was New Labour, the kind of social exclusion, focusing on the kids who don't engage. And actually, all the money starts disappearing from that. And you're thinking, oh great, what are we going to do? I think going forward 9 years... I used to say the welfare state's too big to meet its purposes, but sorry, too small to meet its mission, but too big to deconstruct. 51% cuts in welfare state. I think it's forced us to look at our products and services. It's forced us to think, well, how do we make money? What is it we actually do? And so rather than selling a philosophy to a commissioner, which we used to, if you look at charitable websites, lots of them are not customer focused. They are focused on keeping the commissioner sweet. Some of them still. And I think that through the offices of the chair and the board and quite a lot of challenges to me, we had to do a lot of learning. We looked at the Jim Collins book, Good to Great. And I think the pain made us learn lots of things, and now we're knocking on 5 million quid. Yes, austerity. Yes, don't like the government. But actually, it's rather strange that in the last 4 years, we've produced bigger surpluses than ever, and a bigger turnover than ever, and employ more people than ever. I think that's got absolutely nothing to do with the government or their policy. You know, some end of the government, oh, look, we've freed the market, and isn't Danny innovative? I think it's been blinking hard work and painful.
Yeah.
But we are now focused on our products and services, and the model would be, doesn't matter who's paying for them, the young people are the most important, so the kid with nothing coming from the tougher background might get the service for free. Conversely, the middle class kid whose parents have got money might pay for that service, and you know, but on the other side of it, you've got to be real that there is no market in homelessness. So, for instance, you've got to look at what makes money. Can we do a bit more of that to offset the other bits? Mm-hmm. You know.
So, obviously, again, obviously, you know, 2008 happens.
I think it didn't really hit until 2011-12.
Yeah.
I think 2008 happened. It's, you know, some of those... There was things that could have been really scary. So, you know, we were halfway through the build of you know, coming to the end of the build of my place, but... Or the government going to switch it off. So we were halfway through building, and fortunately, I think it was Tim Loughton, who was the children's minister, who took over the responsibility of the My Place funding from the previous government, at least kept that going, because you would have had all these projects half built.
But obviously, the question would be, from 2008, obviously when it obviously first happened, obviously come into society, 2011, 2012, as you mentioned, the YMCA has obviously got a reduction in its revenue.
Massive.
But obviously it's needed more within society. So could you sort of describe the sort of how YMCA and your challenge to make sure that the YMCA is relevant for society?
Well, I suppose it might be worth commenting. In 2008, 9, 10, we got £1,050,000 grant for the Supporting People funding, which was the classic, how do we help homeless people into their own independence. Some of that was floating support in the community, some of that was the contract here. That figure now, so 2019-20 next year, or was it 2021 next year?
I can't, 2020 next year.
Don't be ridiculous. I can't believe that. We get probably about £180,000. So it's reduced by nearly, is that 1,000% reduction? Is it? Is that right? 100%. Anyway, I don't know. Or, no, what would it be? 92% reduction. That's the level of cuts. What was the question? How have we managed to survive, basically?
Well, yeah, obviously, the challenge to make sure the YMCA is serving...
I think, yeah, okay.
During the challenge, obviously.
Yeah, I think the golden nuggets of moving the organisation from a top-down, run as many commissions from government and tax money as you can, to a more community organisation that's around vision. So we've got this place, we've got this building, it's lovely and new, and we're thinking, oh my goodness, these people who used to come. So the schools got cut. So originally the idea was focusing on schools, serving kids who were having a tougher time. But all of that, all the spokes got chopped out. So whereas before, schools might have gone, yeah, we'll work with you and we'll bring the young people down. It's gone, completely gone. But I think the bits of nuggets of gold were this issue of when the people started using the campus, and we opened up the campus to community members, to, I remember, some quite brave learning disability social worker type folks who just saw the opportunity. Oh, they've got stuff at the YMCA, why don't we use? You know, because learning disability people often get pushed out from everywhere else, don't they? They're the last ones in the queue in the commercial side of things. So it's quite interesting to begin to serve those folk. I think it's also, we had a strategy of widening the engagement in all young people. So and we'd been on that for some time. So rather than defining people by their issue, homelessness, whatever, we were not defining young people at all. That we didn't call them homeless, they were just people who were without family and support. One of the bigger drivers for those young people was estrangement from family because of divorce, not necessarily because of money. Money just made that divorce harder and quicker. But actually, we were working with a much wider group of young people. But back to here, I think opening it up to community groups, I think one thing we dropped on was beginning to develop asset-based community thinking, beginning to think, well, the future of art is in our hands, not the state. You know, so lots of charities that are simply relying on government grants, whether that's local authority, or I think zombie charities, because all they're doing is leeching from one grant year to the next. Well, if you've got any nouse about you, it's all over. You know, the cuts are still happening. It wouldn't surprise me within a year if there's absolutely no finances for our work from local authority. None. Well, if you'd said that a decade ago, well, goodbye sector. And I remember Alan Fraser from Birmingham YMCA, YMCA Birmingham, yeah. You have to say now, don't you? saying to me, interestingly, you know, we've all done quite well in the noughties to expand and grow our businesses. Have we got the skill set to sail through a storm where we're going to have to reduce our businesses to keep them sailing? So I describe the credit crunch as like sailing around the Cape of Good Hope in a boat that's a bit leaky because it isn't in the best shape in the first place. I think we've sailed around the worst bit. I think we still got storms along the way where we think we sorted and we're out of it and we'll have some tough times. But I do think in, you know, the Brexit and all of that, they've got to offer something. And I think society's at the point where they see members of their own family suffering. They see people brutalised by the DWP or immigration or Windrush. And it's just, some of it's just completely wrong in it. It's just wrong to treat other people. And actually, I believe humans are basically decent folk. You know, and you might get the extremes who are just horrible on both sides of politics. But most people, when they see, you know, what's his name? The author, John Steinbeck, you know. I do think people do see the milk of human kindness.
Yeah.
You know.
What does, if you obviously deconstruct all of your time here, what does the YMCA mean to you?
Community, relationship, covenant, young people, mission, democracy, engagement, and a blinking pain in the backside trying to trying to do all of that in one go, you know. So on the other side of it, a bit confused, what does it look like in the 21st century? And I think some of the national stuff and international stuff's fantastic, but let's use our history to force us into the future rather than either worshipping our history or some people want to jettison our history, which is dangerous. You know, this is a historical thing, isn't it? Yeah, I did my first degree in history, and that kind of, you know, the album, or your mum does, the Misty and Roots album, which starts, if you're not conscious of your history, you're bound to repeat it. So I think it's vital that we remember, but we don't necessarily have to worship history. We just have to make it, you know, somebody said with our Christian roots and heritage, you know, be very careful that you don't rip your history to pieces. Be very careful that you don't jettison your prophetic and historical principles, because you can change the house to look what it wants, but if you change the foundations, you ain't got a house. So I think the foundational stuff's really vital, but let's not put it into some kind of totem and worship it. Let it equip us for the 21st century and beyond.
So obviously, like you say, the foundations are very important. What would you say the foundations of the YMCA are in Stoke Country?
Well, I think the foundations of all YMCA, some people forget about it, are the stuff we saw in the Soul in the Machine play, the George Williams. I think the foundational principles are the scriptural mandate that they may be one in an act of service. So people aren't just one for being one and having a party like some, but actually it's about mission to, you know, don't forget George Williams said, you know, he was concerned about the welfare of young people who were being abused by a industrialising, urbanising society. That in that industrial revolution was horrible, wasn't it? Brutal. I mean, we live in Stoke-on-Trent, we're good at burning things, setting things on fire, digging holes in the ground and leaving massive scars and exploiting God's creation. We've moved on from that, thank goodness. But that is the cornerstone of everything we do. The milk of people coming together who have voice, who have some power, who have some desire to help others, coming together, collectively sharing their value, their resources, their money, their passion to deliver something better, deliver a better life to people who haven't.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, the YMCA is a Christian value-based organisation.
Yeah.
How important do you see?
I see it's vital, vital. Otherwise, you deny your roots and your history. And people, it's funny really, because in the YMCA, they think I'm some kind of crazy evangelical nutcase. And in my church, they think I'm some kind of liberal, backsliding, you know, waste of time who hangs around with people of other religions, and that's terrible, you know. Not that's a bit strong, but they don't. I personally think if you do not have faith as a chief exec, your YMCA will soon cease to think about that as an important issue. I don't think there's a template. Well, there is the Bible. But the interpretation of that is open. I think the blessing of George Williams was that ecumenical wide thinking, the inclusive thinking. But it comes from a place of faith. It doesn't come from a place of non-faith. And I think faith and belief, you know, the people, and I don't want to condemn people because, you know, it's not, I'm not sitting here proselytizing. But I've had many discussions over the years that people of secular people who in the YMCA who don't recognise faith, have no faith, argue, oh, well, values are just values and it doesn't matter where they're from. Maybe. I think belief gives you the discipline to hold on to your values and creates a deeper reason to hold on to mission than values are things you won't not do, if you see what I mean. They stop you crossing the line. And I think belief and faith in a loving, active Christ creates an accountability and a drive that is missional and spiritual and actually is the sustainability in why the YMCA is 175 years old.
Yeah.
And I think if you rejected faith, if you rejected Christ, the YMCA would just be one of many other charities and would fade into the background.
So obviously, you've been in the part of the YMCA now for 16 years. 2008 happens, you build the campus, you go from homelessness to young people with housing needs, you sort of create this new model.
Yeah, education project, youth project, activities project.
What, looking back, what key moments could you describe where you look back and think, yeah, we've done it right there?
Opening of the campus, because it was such a nightmare fighting with the builders. Refurbishment of the tower, so we were 21st century ready. I think the big things are getting a decent board of directors and a decent board of governors. Being very clear on accountabilities is one of the best things you can do. Saying yes more than no. Not letting the risk, doom, gloomers not let you do things. Refusing to be a terrorism of perfection because we're humans. Clearly becoming the mission related to Christian values and mission. And I think the big one in the last few years, the step changer has been the development of asset-based community development thinking and returning to what's YMCA's mission rather than just churning government money. So it's great, I've turned away loads of money. I think we're quite, the other key would be quite disciplined on mission and quite disciplined to not do mission drift. I've been offered loads of things, you know, do you want to run residential care homes? No, because we're YMCA. Do you know what I mean? Do you want to do that? No, you know, I remember somebody offering us on a plate, really, an offender project, adult offenders. Well, we're young people, no, let somebody else do it. So you have to be wise what you're going to grab and don't have your tail wagged and make sure you've got people to cry with when it hurts and laugh with when it doesn't.
And obviously, you obviously mentioned earlier on that you dropped the age to work with 16 to 25 year olds.
Mm.
Obviously, it's very important to sort of change the mindset of young people. But why do you think that's important for the young people to be involved with YMCA at such a young age?
I think it's authenticity. I think the one thing I think is all human beings have an authenticity manager, and you've got to make sure that your delivery is something that it says it on the tin. So that evaluation of young people, you know, we work down to babies now. We got younger, and I see ourselves as a youth education project, a youth employment project, a youth support project, a family development project, a community development project, but all rooted back to young people. And I think if you look at the politics of investment in young people. It's shocking what's happened in the past since austerity, you know. Education maintenance allowance, a brilliant thing to keep kids in further education, 100% cut. 21,000 less police. 100% cut of youth service in Staffordshire. 87% cut of youth services in Stoke-on-Trent. Cuts to youth mental health projects. Cuts to education. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it? When you think about it, massive cuts to YOS service. You know, 50% cuts to YOS service. 52% cuts for local authority. Somebody's got to stick up for young people, haven't they? You know, the government have hung them out to dry, let's be honest. You know, just irrespective of what they say, you know, local authority, oh, they've got four youth workers, so they can say they've got a statutory youth service. Four workers for a population, I think, in Stoke-on-Trent, there are 60,000 under-19-year-olds. Four people, it's 15,000 each. Don't be daft.
And is that why you believe the YMCA is important?
Massively important. That it's about... Don't forget, you know, these older folk are all in charge. I mean, it quite interests me, politics, how leaders have got older, not younger. You know, and I'm making a comment about their politics, but, you know, Donald Trump, Theresa May, it's going to, you know, Boris Johnson's, what is he, mid-50s, he's a bit younger. Vladimir Putin's very, he's pretty old, really. Erdogan in Turkey's old. You know, the great Mutter in Germany. I mean, she's, poor woman's poorly, isn't she? She's that old. So where's the youth leadership? And we have to be very careful to grow, and I think we do through NCS programs and others. And how do we counter the Tommy Robinsons and the kind of, you know, young people are drawn to populism because of their anger. And we as a YMCA have to grow peace and justice and care and value and diversity and honour and community and covenant. And I think we're vital in this society at the moment to speak truth to power.
And I obviously asked you what the YMCA means to you, but what do you think the YMCA means to young people?
I hope. It used to be in the city, the grotty place up Anley where Scally kids lived. I think we've moved on from that. My son was saying, we were having a bit of a laugh, my son's now 23, and he said he remembers coming here when he was... well, a kid, because I've been here 16 years, and he said he was scared coming to the YMCA because the atmosphere, he said, there were some tough kids there, weren't there, Dad? You know, that kind of gang stuff. Broken, wrecked, damaged people who broke and wreck other damaged people. I think we've moved on remarkably. I mean, my lad is a personal trainer here now, so it can't be that bad, can it? And I think putting young people first... stops us having to manage them, manage all these naughty kids because the sky's going to fall in. And actually, I think if you give young people responsibility to lead stuff, they always do. I mean, look at yesterday. Brilliant, wasn't it? You know, the place was buzzing, the music's on, the NCS kids are all turning up, the youth leaders are on a mission. You know, I've got Claire coming in, kicking me door down, demanding... Have you got these? Have you got these resources? We want some donations. Come on, come on! Because they're building resources. And all of those donations are building resources to give away to other humans. That's absolutely fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, giving... Seeing... Best thing I see is when one human being is helping another human being be the best they can be. You know, There was a moment here when we had a young woman whose baby died. Cot death. No blame. It was just a horrible, horrible incident. And most of the young people in the accommodation service haven't got an awful lot, have they? You know, some people... Well, now people are beginning to work, but even the young workers, you know, and we've got 30-odd percent working in the tower, we've got 60% working in the move-on accommodation, we've got 100% of kids working in the community. Because what young people want is money... Some money, some accommodation, and a feeling of safety and security. Mm-hmm. And then you can build a life, can't you? That's got to be our core offer.
Yes.
But this poor baby had died, and the mothers are distraught. And what touched me, this is a couple of years ago, when I thought, them little moments have we got something going out here. All the young people downstairs gathered, and all of them instantly pulled their resources, their little bits of money, their little bits of care, and gave all of that stuff to these grieving parents who were their friends. Amazing. The Milk of Human Kindness.
And finally, before we close, YMCA's North Staffordshire's statement is, we develop young people, they develop their world.
Yeah.
How important do you see that?
Well, I just noticed...
And talk about the journey as well, that you've sort of wanted to put a young person through.
Yesterday, I noticed on Twitter, I think you'd done it, or Facebook, there was the residential this weekend of the 12 young youth leaders from the... how do you pronounce it? It's Children and Young People's Network.
City Youth Ambassador.
City Youth... How do you pronounce it? Cyan.
Cyan.
I think it's like ink out of a printer. It's doing me head in, because that's all I could think of. But they've been through a process of young people in schools, going across to hundreds of kids. That then whittled down. Last week I was involved in the Dragon's Den event. This week, those 12 were... I'm just writing it. I just want to thank the Department of Education. It was brilliant. So these kids are 12, 13-year-olds. So it is vital to invest in young people because they will choose our care home. With a vested interest. They will be the next chief exec of the city. They will be the next chief exec of the YMCA. They will be your teacher. They will be your mum. They will be your dad. So I think investment in young people is vital. I think what we do is almost, we often, education is an interesting one. If 5 GCSEs are the gateway to the next part of your life, 48% of kids in Britain don't get 5 GCSEs. So we actually got a 48% failure rate in school. It's terrible. For lots of reasons, let's not get into them now. Our job is to redeem that 48%. Our job in the YMCA is to give those kids a second chance. You know, kids are not suffering from industrial abuse like they were in urban and industrial abuse and abuse from employers, as George Williams saw in 1844. But young people are being abused by the lack of support, the lack of care, the anarchy on social media, the bullying on social media. They are terrorised by a lack of future. They are scared by the lack of somebody to support people. And our job is to meet all of those things for young people. And let's not beat around the bush. Let's be parents, not social workers. Let's be more caring rather than managerial. Let's be more missional than strategic, if you see what I mean. Because let's not take the management pill to organise our systems and structures that are absolutely fantastic. Let's be more human. And I think the YMCA offers humanity, care and love to people at best. And I guess, well, I'm chief exec. I'm getting more anti-management and more soppy as I get older. Just love the kids. Love works.
Thank you.
Thank you.